It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
England is through to the semi-finals of the T20 World Cup after an incredibly nervy run chase against Sri Lanka. Hello and welcome to the Wisden T20 World Cup Daily Podcast. To talk through that game with me today is the managing editor of Wisden.com, Ben Gardner. Ben, that was a really weird game, first and foremost. 52 for one after five overs, Sri Lanka, but England dragged things back superbly, taking 6 for 61 in the final 10 overs to restrict Sri Lanka to 1 for 1 for 8 from their 20. England blitzed 70 off their power play, yet only managed to get to the target with two balls left spare. So nearly 50% of the runs scored in the game were in the power play. Pace on was fairly straightforward to hit, but pace off very difficult. What did you make of that England run chase where it did get incredibly nervy after an amazing start from Hales and Butler?
Yeah, it was nervy. And obviously there's a temptation to sort of not lay into England, but go quite hard on, you know, that they could have managed it better and that sort of thing. I think if you look at it in the context of, as you say, how the game panned out, like, it was clearly runs against the new ball were a lot easier to come by. The spinners were generally hard to get away. Pace off was hard to get away. And when both sides figured that out, then it was a struggle to hit boundaries. But England were never so far ahead of the rate that they would have been comfortable just getting singles. Like, it wasn't like it was six and over. So if you're doing six and over, you either need a lot of twos, which will end up doing, or you need some boundaries. So they had to go for some boundaries, and so there was probably criticism of the likes of Livingston for getting out the way he did, but then Stokes and Wokes batting as they did, basically foregoing all risk. There is also a risk in that, if that makes sense, because if there had just been a few more dot balls towards the end, then all of a sudden you're 2 and 2 from losing the game and crashing out. So I think there's quite a lot of the conditions that went into the chase panning out the way it did. They could have been a little bit smarter, but they were also hampered by having one of their sort of their most sensible, most innings managing players injured, I guess. I think they'll just be pretty happy to get through it and will take a lot of encouragement from Hales' innings, Stokes' innings, and how they form the ball, I guess.
I see what you're saying, but they did get the required rate down to under 6. In the last 14 overs, England pretty much went at fives, and their record chasing recently is really bad. So in the last 11 games they've chased, they've only won 4 of them, and that includes the win today against Sri Lanka. It includes, again, the chase against Afghanistan that wasn't exactly, didn't exude confidence, and includes one of the games in the Pakistan series where Phil Salt blitzed 88 off barely anything, which wasn't really like a normal chase. And I think you're right to mention Dal Malan. He limped off the field in the Sri Lanka innings with what looked like a groin injury. At the time of recording, we don't know for certain how severe it is, but it didn't look great. And I think England really missed his calm in the middle in that chase. Harry Brooks' form isn't great at the moment. His record in Australia is actively pretty bad, including Big Bash cricket. Liam Livingston is a good finisher, but I think, as his dismissal showed, I don't think he's confident in managing chases like that. He's almost, you almost back him more when 9 and over is needed rather than 6 and over. That was a really, really bad shot. Moeen has never been a great manager of chases, and Stokes before this game has been out of form, I guess, and Curran, yeah, he hits it well, but there's a reason why he averages 13 in T20 cricket. So I do see England as being really vulnerable in chases, because I'm not quite sure who's gonna guide them home when it's 8 and over needed on a tricky pitch.
Yeah, I guess the thing that's I can't work out, because you're right, obviously, you know, they crushed the power, but they should have been way ahead and it was tight. So obviously the last 14 overs weren't great, but it's trying to work out why it wasn't great, because it didn't, like, you can isolate dismissals and say that those came up because of aggression. But in general, England weren't being overtly aggressive, I think. I mean, they hit two boundaries between the end of the power play and the four that Wokes hit to finish the game. And Brooke, you could argue that was an example of actually of tentativeness. I think there was a leg stump half volley basically, and he doesn't go fully at it the way that he would have done if England were batting first, I guess. So that's what I can't work out really. Like, these are all good players. It's not as if they're just like all swinging from the hip and falling in the deep. There were, you know, long stretches in most of the partnerships where there were just singles. Like Livingston was, you know, it's not as if he'd got off to a flyer and played one shot too many. He was four off six when he got out. So that's the thing that I can't really work out.
Completely see what you're saying, but I think that's worrying that they don't have that confidence chasing six and over. It shouldn't be that difficult for someone. You know, I know it was doing a bit for the spinners and it was hard to score quickly, but they should be better at just accumulating 6 to 7 runs over, as Stokes kind of showed. Stokes had a couple of hairy moments early on in his inning, but when he decided, no, we're just going to get there in ones and twos, he kind of got there quite easily. And I think that was the big plus for England, really. Like, you almost saw that Stokes had kind of clicked into World Cup mode. Like in 2019, in the final, where he pats the last ball, the full toss from Trent Bolt for two, rather than taking the risk and trying to hit it for six. He talked about how he'd watched the India-Bangladesh game in 2016 in the T20 World Cup, where Bangladesh had needed 2 for 3, tried to go for the boundaries, didn't get it. And actually, Stokes made a calculated decision to take fewer risks when it really, really mattered. And you kind of saw that from Stokes in the second half of his innings today. And, you know, if Milan is injured, Stokes is going to be, his importance increases massively into that England side.
Yeah, I think Stokes scored 33 from 33 non-boundary balls, which shows just how well he managed that in terms of rotating the strike and running the twos. And yeah, I guess we should talk about the Milan thing because it really didn't look good, I think. Like that, but especially almost like the innocuousness of the incident. Like, it clearly wasn't an impact thing or like an overstretching thing. It was just something went basically, and those things are never like, you know, hugely serious, but they are normally 2 or 3 weeks basically. So, you know, let's wait to hear. But if that is what happens, it's just devastating. I mean, for him as much as for England, like, this is the tournament that the last 5 years of his career is kind of built up to, really, in these conditions where his game is so suited. He's been so central to that side, and rather than being peripheral on the other England sides. And he's 35. So if that is the end, he's might not get another world tournament, because the next 20 World Cup is in 2 years' time. So yeah, for him, it's really, really tough. And I guess we'll come on to what England do to replace him if they have to. But just from a personal point of view, it's really hard not to feel for him.
What do you think England will do if Milan is indeed ruled out of the semi-final?
Yeah, so I guess there's two options. They can bring in a bowler, which I think was almost sort of a popular thing before he got injured, or they would just bring in Bill Salt for him. So it's either just change the balance of the side or changing sort of like the balance of the batting lineup, if not the side, I guess. I would bring in Phil Salt, and I think that's what they will do. There is obviously a temptation to the bring in Chris Jordan thing. One, just because Jordan's obviously a really good player, brilliant fielder, such an experienced head to have in a semi-final and a final. And then also you've had, you know, Livingston and Curran at 7 and 8 look at place too low. You can push them up in that case. But I think, firstly, England's bowling has been their strongest suit in this game and at this tournament, I think. And you know, Curran has really come into his own. Their death bowling was absolutely brilliant today. So you just don't need Jordan for that if Curran's going to bowl that well and Wood is going to be that reliable at the death too. And because Jordan is a specialist, if you bring him in, you kind of have to bowl him. It would be very odd, and I don't think he would do it, therefore, to have Jordan in the side. And you can see a scenario where they kind of end up starting well and then getting to the end and say, like, oh, we haven't bowled Jordan, let's bowl Jordan. And actually would be kind of the better option as a death bowler. And I think this balance, if it were to be Phil Salt at six, where England, or six or seven, I think, where if it's like Billings in the last World Cup, bring him in at seven, and he's kind of your insurance. I think England would be fine with that. I know Salt is mostly an opener, but he's done that role for England. He will always go hard from ball one. And in some ways, that might suit certain members of the batting lineup. We saw Stokes as the anchor today, sort of acing that role kind of to perfection. Brooke has obviously been peripheral, didn't have a great day today, but perhaps moving him up to number four, or Moeen Ali has obviously got a very good record in the top four. A lot of those players have looked to place too low, and this is a way to move them up without sacrificing batting depth, I suppose. So I think that's what they will do.
And it was a really good day for England with the ball. On the most part, they managed to restrict Sri Lanka to just 1 for 1 off that amazing start. Adil Rashid was brilliant, 1 for 16. How impressed were you with Rashid? Because he had a quiet tournament up to now. He's not really been in the wickets, but he bowled really well today.
Yeah, well, he was brilliant against them last year as well when they visited England. I think in that series, he went for 1 boundary in 3 games, and he also didn't go for a boundary today. So I think that's now 4 games against Sri Lanka, and Rashid has gone for 1 boundary. And that was kind of, that series is like almost Rashid at his peak as a T20 bowler. That was when he was obviously so confident in his shoulder. I think he bowled one ball at 70 miles an hour in that series, a faster ball. He'd worked on so many variations that it seemed like it was like the total package as a T20 bowler. And he's just kind of, it seems like that's fallen away a bit. And it's almost as if it's just that rip just hasn't been there, basically, I think, with his leg spinner, perhaps most of all, is the one thing I can think. But he was really good today. There were obviously no bad balls. Obviously a tough pitch to hit the spinners and the slower bowlers on. But he was still, really good. And if that is just him now, even if he just takes confidence from it and thinks, okay, even if I'm not going to be ripping through sides in the middle over, I can go a run a ball. That'll be a huge bonus for England in the next game or two.
I think Curran as well. I think I saw a stat on Twitter that Curran is going at less than a run a ball at the death this World Cup. Obviously, that's not really sustainable, but he's obviously doing pretty well at the moment. And just on Pathum Nisanka, an amazing innings. He's more of an accumulator. His strike rate this tournament was actually less than 100 going into this game. He was the main guy who punished England early on. I know England didn't bowl that well against him, but that was some start. And I think there'll be some people out there kind of questioning how Sri Lanka approached the second half of the innings in a very similar way to England. They really, really slowed down. But I don't know what you think, Ben, but I thought they identified 160 as being a really good score. And given their power play start, they thought if they were conservative for the rest of the innings, that would almost guarantee a score of around 160. I guess they just didn't foresee a collapse like that at the end. Like, it was an abnormally bad finish going at basically a run a ball for the last 10 and the last few, last 3 or 4 overs as well. So they bat deep with Hasaranga at 8. They would have backed themselves to get 160 after that start, and that probably would have been enough.
Yeah, because I guess you can split it as much as obviously did regroup really well after that power play. You can almost split that middle into 3 sections as well. Like, because what it was after 8 overs, they were 71 for 1. So actually, they carried on after the power play okay. And then they lost some wickets through the middle. I mean, what, there were 4 overs where didn't hit a boundary, lost 2 wickets. But then actually, with 5 overs to go, and Rajapaksa was sort of uppercutting bowlers for 4. You still had Nisanka there. So it was sort of with 5 overs to go. That was when they were 116 for 3. They'd be eyeing up 160, 170 even at that stage. And with still 7 wickets in hand. So actually, and England did just bowl really, really well. I mean, Rashid gets out Nisanka, and then the rest were basically unhittable. You had sort of like that sort of that combination of Curran with all his variations and his canniness, and then Wood just bowling it as fast as he can. And also, thank God, Wood is okay.
Yeah.
When he bowled the last ball of that first over and then just grimaces and walks off, you're like, oh dear, this is the T20 World Cup gone. This is England's tour of Pakistan in the drain as well. And then he comes back on and bowls as quickly as he has all tournaments. So that was good. But yeah, England were really good at the end, more than Sri Lanka threw it away, I think.
There's quite a lot of grimacing from England players today. Obviously, Milan, that looks potentially quite serious, but Stokes has got so much strapping on his knee and he's not moving at 100%. Wood, even when he bowled those 2 overs, he didn't look at 100%. He was bowling quickly, but you almost, because of how quickly he can bowl, you kind of forget that if he's only bowling 88, that is below where he is normally bowling at the moment. Just to finish, Ben, England in the semi-finals now, finishing second in the group. How do you think they'll go? How do you assess their chances?
Well, can I just say one thing on Hales quickly as well? Because that was really, as good as Stokes was, that was the innings that won England the game. It was weird. It was interesting how Butler basically took on the spinners and him the quicks in that power play. That worked really well as a partnership. And Hales has been asked about the ODI stuff before, and obviously hasn't played a List A game in ages, and he's not in that squad to follow this series. But I still think there is a question to be answered there. I mean, obviously, Jason Roy is the incumbent, but we're just yet to see how his form is in that format, basically, given his tough summer. And he doesn't have, given that the World Cup is next year, and England will want to have that, what they see as their first 11 playing as much as possible together. After Roy, it's not really clear who that next person is in 50 over cricket. I mean, Vince is in that squad, Milan's in that squad. Again, we'll see whether how he pulls up after today. But Hale's doing that kind of thing. I mean, it was a lot of sort of balls kind of hit through the ring today, wasn't it? It was that, like, the kind of tone setting 10 over power play kind of thing where you're just playing good cricket shots and timing them really well and getting to the fence. So I think it could well be a possibility that in a few months' time, England don't know who their opener is and they're like, well, we've got this world-class white ball opener. Why aren't we using him? On the semis and looking ahead to tomorrow, it looks like it'll be India and South Africa, although that's really far from certain, I think. I mean, given how this World Cup has panned out, how there have been very, very few thrashings, how every team has shown they're able to push every team, I would not at all be surprised if either Zimbabwe or Netherlands pull off a surprise tomorrow, and then it's basically whoever wins the other game right that goes through in that case. But if it is India, as it looks like, it's just going to be a fascinating game, and that'll be a massive test for England's bowlers, because they've kind of, it's a really well-rounded attack, and they've found solutions to kind of every problems they've been faced, whether it's been a fast star or it's been one particular batter who's been getting top and that sort of thing. Suryakumar Yadav is a problem that I don't really know if there are answers to. Like, I don't know what his weakness is. I don't know how you target him. I don't know how you keep him quiet. He scores quickly every single time. He seems to thrive on the pressure in the big occasion. He basically never plays a bad innings, and he is so consistent. That is almost the key battle. As good as, you know, India's lineup is apart from him, if England can come up with some sort of plan to him that they believe in, that will be significant, I think. Yeah.
Anyway, that is all for today's show. Cheers, Ben. We'll be back tomorrow for a bumper day in Group 2, where all six sides are playing, and we'll, by the end of tomorrow, we'll know the four semi-finalists. Cheers, Ben. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back tomorrow.
Podcast Network.